Get real.
Get real. Get real. Get real. Get real.
All right, welcome to Get Real with Jesse Steele. This is a very special episode for me because I'm here with my burrito daughter. What's up, burrito daughter?
What's up, burrito father?
Would you like to know what a burrito daughter is? Today's episode is starring Abs Stoiber, who also starred in Mamma Mia with yours truly. Cut to a break real quick and we'll be back talking about theater, film, all things LGBTQ, so many cool things. We have a great episode for you, so stick around. We're going to cut to a little bit of advertising here, and we'll be right back. Hey there, Eastern Sierra. It's Jesse. Let me ask you a question. How much is your energy bill each month? It's pretty high, right? Well, with the new climate change bill that passed, there is actually 30% tax rebates in there for going solar. Why is that important? Well, one of our top advertisers is High Point Solar. They were already the best and the cheapest in the area. And if you mention this ad, you get $250 off your purchase. But now, whatever you choose to purchase, you can put in a 30% tax rebate. That means when all is said and done, most likely your bill is less than $100 a month. And once it's paid off, you no longer have bills. So, the second smartest thing you could do, get yourself an electric water heater, an electric dryer, make sure all your appliances are electric, then you don't have bills anymore once the solar is paid off, which is like 7 years. It's not even a big deal. It's like having a car. That's a car that's going to last for 30 or 40 years, by the way. So what's the first smartest thing you could do? Call Amy at High Point Solar. That's 760-937-5849. Again, 760-937-5849. Or go to High Point solar.com and get your free quote today. And don't forget to mention, you heard this from Jesse at Eastern Sierra Now. You'll get $250 off your purchase. Trust me, worth it. Okay, we are back. Make sure you go check out our different advertisers because they put a lot to help us out and get this going. And we're really trying to build a podcast nation here, if you will. Lots of different podcasts. We got Get Real with Jesse Steele. We're going to have Business Matters with Amy Smith, where Amy talks to different business owners in the area about what it's like doing business in the Eastern Sierra. It's a unique experience, you know. We have got some political stuff coming up here pretty soon, also starring Amy Smith, Just a Minute, where we talk to the different political candidates, and they get 1 minute to answer. Otherwise, they get hit with squirt guns. I wish. No, but they do have to stop at 1 minute. That's true for sure. We've got an automotive podcast coming up. And my favorite will be the Butthurt Owens Valley podcast, exclusively on the Eastern Sierra Now. So anyway, we are here, like I said, with Abs Stoiber. Abs, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Abs, let's just start real quick with your connection to the Eastern Sierra and then where you went to school, what you did. Just give it a 5 minute, you know, rundown of what's going on.
Yes.
What went on better.
Yeah. So I grew up in the area, born and raised. I went through the Mammoth school system. I transferred in my junior year, went to Bishop High School, graduated from there. I'm the class of 2019. Went then to UC Santa Barbara. COVID hit, but I finished out my degree and I just graduated this summer. And now I'm at the California Institute of the Arts, mm-hmm. Where I'm getting my master's in stage management. And it's like a 3-year program, so just started that up. But yeah, both of my parents have been living in the Eastern Sierras for a decent amount of time now. And I try to come back as often as I can on breaks because I love this area. And it's such a beautiful place with such amazing people. And so, yeah, that's kind of my little history with Eastern Sierras.
So you brought up something interesting that I didn't even think about, even though I knew this was going on with you at the time, COVID. How was it going to college during quarantine?
Yeah. So I was back here in the Eastern Sierras and living in Bishop with my parents mm-hmm. during that time because mm-hmm. I decided I did not want to try living on campus. And I was like, I'd rather be home where I can easily isolate but still be in a beautiful area and I can have my parents as support and I can have all my pets. But it was hard. And it's a whole other layer when you're trying to do acting on Zoom, which... if you think it's weird, yes, you're correct. It's weird and it's hard.
It's weird anyway.
Yeah.
I went to acting school. I know. It's weird.
Yeah. And trying to do it with a bunch of all of my, like half of my class were all transfer students. It was their first year at UCSB. Mm-hmm. And all of their experience with UCSB for that first year was all on Zoom. Oh, and so I didn't meet half of my classmates until we came back for our second year for the program, which is insane, And the fact that we made it through like is kind of a miracle, because by the end of our first year, all of us were burnt and we were like, we need this to end. Because for anyone who knows acting, you need to be there. Film is a little bit different, but we were all very much theater background.
And so, to learn acting, you have to be with people. The point is reaction.
Yeah.
So you go over Zoom, you have to wait for the Zoom to catch up to you before you can say, that's got to be awful.
Yeah, and then God forbid that the Zoom freezes during a performance, which happened on multiple occasions.
It's insane. I did a couple of Zoom plays during that time. Same thing. Yeah. You just got to wait. Hold it.
And I will say my least favorite part of Zoom theater, any kissing, was no.
What do you
Like there were, like, there were some shows that would try really, that I saw one that was directly into the camera, which I don't need you to see mouths that close.
That's weird.
Trying to work around, trying to be, pretending we're in a physical space. The one show that I was, it was actually the first show I stage managed. It was, I think, the show that worked the best because it was written to be on Zoom. The writer we had, because it was COVID, structured the entire play around being on Zoom. So it was like, it made it work. But it was weird. It was a weird, weird time. On the other hand, it was a lot of film experience because I filmed my own stuff. At the time, we were working at Sierra Wave, and so I learned how to use Adobe. And because of that, there are so many little projects I did over COVID that I don't think I ever would have done had it not been for COVID.
Okay.
So it had its, you know, it had its good, yeah. It opened doors that I don't think would have happened if COVID didn't happen, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've done a lot of different cool things that I never would have done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you can always look at the positive of whatever. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happened positive for me for quarantine. But it was weird. It was a weird time.
Yeah.
Zoom plays. Sierra Classic Theater did a murder mystery on Zoom, written for Zoom. Yeah. So it was like, okay, are you all logged in? Whatever. Yeah. And that kind of thing. And then one person died, and they're like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's the only way to make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, you had to, because, oh, my God, that was a terrible time. Can't imagine being in college. I also went to Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of parties. There was a lot of stuff that happened. And it's like, if you have to be at home, you're not even out there experiencing that. God, I feel bad. But it's over. You got through it. Now you moved on and graduated.
Yeah.
That's great. So now you have a BFA in acting?
I do. Okay. Yeah. And nice. So.
What does one do with a BFA in acting?
Oh, gee, I'm still figuring that out. No, I mean, for me, it was really important because being in such a rural area, like, the most experience and like teaching that I got was doing community theater and like getting to work with people like Shira, who, for people that don't know, she runs Mammoth Repertory Theater. She does Mammoth Lakes Film Festival. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like she was a big mentor of mine coming in and like doing Playhouse 395. I also did professional summer camp the summer before I transferred. It was called California State Summer School of the Arts, CESA. Some students, there's a few students that went during my time when I was in high school that also went to that camp. Mm-hmm. But that was the most acting training I'd gotten up until that point. So for me, getting my degree, it wasn't about going to college for theater. It was, I want to train with people and get to work with more professionals in the field who know what they're talking about and getting to just focus on theater and just focus on my acting. Because I will admit, when I came in, it was kind of a small fish in a big pond moment where and every artist has this moment of like, am I actually good enough to be in this industry? Because there are at least thousands that they want to do this, but it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was just important just to get training and to get to work with people that know what they're doing and to tell me, hey, you could work on this. This is something that you can do. You're at a decent level. Here's how you can be better. That was what was important for me for my degree.
Right.
So, you know, something that I was told a lot is like, even if you don't want to go big and be in movies or whatever, just having the training is what's more important. No one in the real world remotely cares if you have a BFA or an MFA in acting. people that are looking at resumes, they're not going to care about that. What they care about is, do you know what you're doing? And that training can mm-hmm. help close that barrier right. and close that gap between I know what I'm doing versus I have no idea what this industry is or how to improve.
Exactly. That makes perfect sense. Just knowing how to be on a set, speaking from film side yeah. of it. You know, like if somebody says striking, you don't look directly at the light.
Yeah.
Those are the things you learn from, whether it's school or trade schools or just working. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a lot of that, and I completely agree with you. And in the acting world, you have to understand your palette. You have to yeah. understand what you can bring to the table. And if you're just now learning, like, oh, I'm supposed to be emotional, you know, whatever, it's you're not going to help that person. There's yeah. time is money. And if it's a real-world theater situation, even community theater.
Yeah.
I mean, we're doing Clue right now in Mammoth, you know, and you were there last night, and it's if you don't know what you're doing, you have to ask questions and everybody else has to sit there and wait for your question, where if you just knew how to do this, you would show up prepared and ready and not know that. And that's no knock against anybody that doesn't know what they're doing. Community theater is for exactly that. Community mm-hmm. point is when you have that experience and you've learned to do it because you love it like you do. And you've done this for years, you know? Mm-hmm. So like some of the other plays that you've done, Crucible,
yeah.
right? Mamma Mia, Into the Woods, mm-hmm. you know, some of that. And we did Into the Woods and Mamma Mia together mm-hmm. and that was super fun.
Yeah.
You know, do you have any experiences from any of your local, it doesn't have to be Mamma Mia, but just any mm-hmm. of the local theater that you've done that you learned something, let's say from Shearer or Allison or any of the Playhouse 395 or whatever, is there something you learned during that you took with you to your more professional world that you were working in later that you thought, hey, I'm so glad I did that in high school here in the Eastern Sierra. I learned these things that helped you, you know, get ahead of somebody else or just succeed in what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I think about, because I'm a musical theater kid. That's mm-hmm. what I grew up on. I listened to so many different soundtrack albums. Like Wicked mm-hmm. was one of my absolute favorites growing up. Mm-hmm. And so having a musical theater background was mm-hmm. interesting, going then into a program that I did one musical. And that was the only musical that was through the theater department mm-hmm. in my 4 years at undergrad.
Okay.
But
25th Spelling Bee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
25th Putnam County Spelling
Bee. Yeah. 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Mm-hmm. I did the same one.
Yeah. It's a very long title. I was an ensemble member, but then I was also an understudy for Logan Schwartz and Grubenier.
That's right. You told me that. That's mm-hmm. a great play if you've never seen that. We did it in Mammoth a few years ago. So it's not going to happen here anytime soon because it's already happened. But if you get the chance, hilarious play.
Yeah, it's super, super funny. Mm-hmm. And the point, too, usually is having adult actors because it's all kids. They're yeah. all middle schoolers, but it's yeah. all
the
played by adults.
The characters are supposed to be 12 and in a spelling bee, but they're adults playing 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's super fun.
Like my character was a nerd that Barfy.
Oh,
name?
Yeah.
Barfay, William yeah. Barfay, but he goes by Barfy. He talks like this, and he has a problem, you know, he's a very weird kid, like that kid that sits in the back and picks his nose, you know, and so that's how I played it. And everybody has their, like, Schwartz, yeah. he was really incredible, the one you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
So it's a really cool play. You should check that. So it's cool that you did that. But anyway, continue.
Yeah. But yeah, and so coming from musicals, like, a big thing that I think gave me a good foundation is, like, learning how to act with music. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, it is a different ballgame because you're having to juggle a variety of things of being natural and authentic, but at the mm-hmm. same time, you're singing a song. And there's no, like, easy way to do that. And mm-hmm. so it's just adding an extra layer to one's acting. And so then going in to my program, it was nice because at first I was, like, a little bit bummed because, again, musical theater is my niche. That's mm-hmm. what I love to do, that and Shakespeare. But then getting to just focus on acting and doing that initial base layer, mm-hmm. I felt that was really helpful to kind of have done the extremes and then have to pull it back and go really specific on, like, this is what I need to focus on.
Okay.
Another thing, too, is, like, Shira helped me so much get into the BFA program.
Yeah.
She was, because they have two rounds for people to audition to get into the program at UCSB. Mm-hmm. I didn't get in the first time. Mm. And to be honest, mm-hmm. I did not think I was going to get in mm-hmm. the second time around. I auditioned to do it again because they said, hey, we'd love to see you again and mm-hmm. come back. But I had my second audition. Mm-hmm. As soon as it was done, I sat on the couch. I was eating a box of Goldfish, but I was I'm glad I checked my phone because I was like, I'll check my email just in case.
Yeah.
Because they were going to do callbacks that same day. Mm-hmm. 10 minutes later, I literally had Goldfish in my mouth. Look at my phone. And there's an email going, hey, we want to see you in like 5 minutes. And I'm like, oh, no. So I get up and I brush my teeth so I don't have Goldfish in my mouth. Get back on my laptop. Because this was, again, this was during Zoom. So mm-hmm. all the auditions were online as well. Mm-hmm. So I sit in my room and I'm like, Mom, I'm going back in. And I sit down and I'm like, okay, hi. You wanted to see me again? But Shira was the reason I think I got in. Because she worked with me on my audition stuff. And I told her, hey, I didn't get in the first time. Can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
And she really helped me understand of like, you need to be able to connect to this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just something you're spitting out. This isn't just
like Goldfish.
Like Goldfish. But you have to be able to connect to this in some way, whether it's something that's very deeply personal to you or mm-hmm. you just personalize it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And getting that lesson and then going into my program where mm-hmm. that was a huge thing I had to focus on.
Right.
That was a really nice just like stepping stone of like, oh, I know what they're talking about when they're asking for this. And I mean, I still had to work on it because again, that's the reason I went into a program in the first place.
Right.
But having someone in my life be able to say, hey, these are things you can do. It wasn't like I was going in completely blind, not knowing
anything. Gives you a bit of a leg up.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did it feel being rejected the first time? Because that's a huge part of being an actor is rejection.
No.
And that might have been one of your first. So how did that feel going into this thing you wanted so badly and you didn't get it?
No, I was bummed.
Yeah.
And especially because I was doing a lot of the like preparation
mm-hmm.
to like go in. Because our first year, you're not even allowed, unless you're a transfer student, to audition your first year. Mm-hmm. It's you have to take Theater 5, which is like an intro to acting class. They want you to take all these other mm-hmm. classes. And I really focused on like taking like my crew credits that I needed. But I was doing all of my ground laying stuff. So then by the time I auditioned, I was like, okay, I did all the things I need to do. I'm ready. And it hurt.
Yeah.
And I was super, super bummed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was honestly for the better because then by the time I got to the second audition, mm-hmm. There were still stakes. I still wanted to get in.
Right.
But at the same time, I was like, if I don't get in, it's not the end of the world.
It's not going to be worse than the last time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, and which is why I think I was so laid back after mm-hmm. I did my audition, because I was like, I did it again.
Yeah.
I did it. I got through the pain.
They probably saw that lack of, I want this so bad. It's more of, I'm just natural.
Yeah.
And that's in acting. That's a huge part of it. You have to be able to just be.
Yeah, which is huge. And also, like, I do not consider myself a good auditioner, which is very unfortunate because that's 90% of the job.
Yeah.
Until you know, become famous and you can just get hired based off of knowing people
mm-hmm.
and you can kind of bypass that process.
Mm-hmm.
But for even like anyone starting out, you have to audition. It's mm-hmm. just part of the job.
Yeah.
So that's been something I've had to work on is because, again, I am not a good auditioner. I don't think I am.
Yeah.
Especially because having social anxiety as an actor, it's a little ironic because you'd think, you know, usually when people think of actors, they're like, oh, they're super extroverted, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Being in front of people sometimes is really, really hard for me. And mm-hmm. once I get to know someone and or I know that, like, mm-hmm. I have the job, then I'm like, okay, I'm good, whatever.
Yeah.
But having that first impression, which is common for a lot of people, is really, really hard.
Yeah.
And so it's like, but that's a big thing I've had to learn is like, if you get it, great. If you don't, there's a million other things you can audition for. And you can, especially for like bigger shows, like musicals,
mm-hmm.
depending on where you go, they're usually kind of doing them everywhere
mm-hmm.
and like of the same production.
Right.
So it's like, if I don't get into this one, there might be another audition like 6 months from now, just at a different company.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah. And it might be something better.
Yeah.
You might get something more from it. It's interesting you say with social anxiety and stuff like that, because I get the same way. I don't like talking to people. Everybody goes, yeah, right, Mr. Theater and all that. Get real with Jesse Steele. Doesn't like talking to people. I don't. I don't like being in public. If it's me, I can't stand it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm a character, all day. I couldn't care less. 100,000 people could be staring at me, and I'll do anything in character. But as me, oh my God, I can't talk to people. And so it's interesting that you feel the same way about that. And it just kind of... does that change for you on stage or do you have to think about it?
Oh, no, I'm in the same boat. And which is why I gravitated to theater in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with a lot of just like me being the kid who I was,
mm-hmm.
I liked being able to escape and be a different person that wasn't myself and get to do the things that either I would never do or that I was too scared to do, and get to do that through a person. And usually also through song, because again, I love singing. But yeah, I like, for me, and we were talking about this earlier, but as some people may know, I was anchoring temporarily on Sierra Wave.
Yeah.
And that was one of the hardest things for me to do, because I had to just be myself, but just heightened. But for me, I'm used to channeling myself through another person, which is a completely different thing.
Yes.
So it's interesting knowing that, like, actors, like, you can be really good at being other people. Mm-hmm. You can be really terrible at being yourself in front of other people, which
absolutely.
Is insane.
I would say most of us are like that.
Yeah.
Actors are a weird bunch, man. We're you meet any of us, you're going to be like, okay.
Yeah.
Especially in the Eastern Sierra. We're a kooky bunch of people. On all the different Sierra Classic Theater, Mammoth Rep, Playhouse 395.
Yeah.
You know, it's nuts. Yeah. And it's crazy the way that actors are, but that's who we are. That's what we are as people. Everybody, maybe your thing is basketball. Maybe your thing is basket weaving. Whatever it is, you have your people in your tribe. We just happen to be the nuts ones. That's why it's called drama.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nice. So what I'm hearing you say about your time in Eastern Sierra and just basically growing up in this world and stuff like that, you your mom said that you could dance before you could walk. Yeah. How did we come about the name Burrito Daughter?
So during Mamma Mia, for anyone in my life that knows me even remotely well, I love Taco Bell. Taco Bell is like my go-to place. I went to Taco Bell today. That's right. And I got a cheese quesadilla and a fiesta veggie burrito. That's what I got today. So I love Taco Bell, and you eventually learned that, and you started bringing me burritos. Yeah.
So to explain a little further, we were in the play Mamma Mia together, and if you don't know Mamma Mia, it's about a lady that lives on an island in Greece, and she had three boyfriends 20 years prior to this, and one of them is the father of her daughter, but she didn't want to ruin their lives because they showed up on vacation, so they leave. So she just raises the daughter on her own. So the daughter... Then Sophie, is that the name? Yeah, Sophie decides she's getting married and she wants her dad to walk her down the aisle, but she doesn't know who he is. So she reaches out to those three guys, invites them, and tricks them into coming to the island, not knowing why they're there or that they are potentially her father. And then she's trying to figure out which one is her dad. The whole thing is set to ABBA music, ABBA being the famous band from the 70s. Are they Swedish? Something like
that. I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And it's a really fun play. It's a lot of people's very favorite play of all time. There's so many people that love it, even locally, you know.
Yeah.
And so we put on a fantastic version of Mamma Mia.
Mm-hmm.
I was the gay dad, which was super fun for me, you know, and then you were Sophie.
Yeah.
So in the end, I wasn't the real dad. But I feel like I'm the one that probably would have been there. So so it's super awesome. So that's why she was my daughter, and I got her burritos. So not that you guys need to know anything about that, but because I already said burrito daughter, you're probably like, what in the hell are you talking about, Jesse?
Yeah.
So yeah, Mamma Mia was very fun. Do you have any good memories of Mamma Mia other than that?
Yeah, I mean, I had a wonderful, because that was, so, like, in a way, one of my dream roles. Like, because I've
fantastic role for a girl your age.
It's a,
you're
it was
17.
A, yeah, right? I was 17. Yeah, 17. I think I turned 18 like before we went up, and so I was kind of around her age. And getting to do that at a time where it was my senior year, and I had always wanted to play a lead like that, but I had never, even in like Playhouse Kids, I never gotten to play a role like that. And that felt like something off my bucket list.
Probably took a lot with you to college.
Yeah.
You got the chance to actually hold a show.
Yeah.
I mean, you were the lead of that show. You and Marianne Schott were the leads of that show.
Yeah.
You, and if it wasn't her, it was you in either scene. And that's because you're the two protagonists of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because I'll say this memory, because during one show, I'm sure you remember this because it's the one that I
know
take.
Where you're going. Continue.
But we were, it was maybe like the second to last show or something. I can't remember what show it was. For context, I break very easily, especially if I don't prep myself.
And if you have to be on stage with a jerk like me, I push everybody to their limits, everything.
Yep.
That's what I do.
Yeah, and so for me, like, if I know something's coming or it's like I get exposed to it enough, I can, you know, stay in my brain and just kind of let it pass. So so Jesse's character, Harry, he plays a guitar. I don't think you do play.
Nope.
No, you don't play guitar. But the character at the beginning of one song, Thank You for the Music, he's supposed to play the guitar. And then I come out and I'm like, whoa, like, hey, you're playing the guitar. And we bond over, oh my gosh, you know the same song. Mm-hmm. This is what your mom used to sing. And so usually...
For the record, I was supposed to learn and I just didn't get the time. So to play the little basic chords of the song. Yeah. And so what we did is we had... Brad Wiedela, who was playing guitar in the band, play the actual song, and I watched him through the corner of my eye so that I could match his movements to make it look like I was the one playing guitar. So it was supposed to look legitimately like I was playing the guitar. I will let you continue from there.
Yeah. And so every night, it was, for the most part, it was realistic. It was a realistic fake playing, and that was how we did it. So that second to last show, whatever it was, I come out, and I'm already laughing because it's already taking me back. I come out, and you're fully faking it, and your, like, arm is going all over the place, and you're just going nuts with this soft, beautiful guitar that's supposed to be what you're playing. And I just come out, and I'm trying so hard, and I'm talking the whole time. I'm talking and singing, but you can hear it sounded like I was crying because I was just stifling this laughter and I couldn't get it under control.
I looked over and Martha was looking at me like, I'm going to freaking kill you. Like, I couldn't help it. So what happened on my end was I accidentally played it the wrong time and somebody in the audience started laughing and I'm like, oh, this is good. So then I just kept going. Yeah. And so then I made it seem like it's ridiculous. And I was going, you can't see my hand right now, but like up and down really big, like I'm jamming on this thing. And people just fell out of their chairs. Chris next to her is freaking dying. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. And so,
so I just kept going because what else am I supposed to do?
And on top of that, this was also the one song that was for me the hardest one because there's a really high note at the end of it. It's, how does it go? Is it one alive, one a chance? And at the time, because I've taken some music, like singing voice lessons. Yeah. And so now, like nowadays, I can hit that note and it's not a ton of strain on my voice.
Right.
At the time, that was the hardest note for me to hit. And it was kind of a hit or miss of whether I'd get it. So just think, me doing this, stifling laughter, knowing I have this high note, I'm thinking, I can't, and I keep telling myself, I'm like, pull yourself together. And the little other part of my brain's going, I can't. This is just really funny. And every time I try to stifle it, the memory would come back again. And then I'd start re-laughing.
And it doesn't help that the audience, they're all bending over, laughing, falling out of their chairs. And you're supposed to be paying attention to this. And this is supposed to be a touching moment between
us. It's supposed to be a very heartfelt moment because it's the first time they're meeting each other and they're bonding. I could not pull myself. I think finally I did near the end, but I like laughed my way through the high note. Mm-hmm. So then it came out the way it needed to. And then I was able to pull myself together. And I think at one point too, I let myself have a character reaction of laughing to like full laugh I could get it out of my system. But that's like one of the, like, because, you know, Martha was not amused. And she, you know, she came up to us after and was like, really? And I was like, I tried.
Yeah,
I tried so hard. I tried so hard. But that's like one of my apps. Every time I think about it, like if it just pops in my brain, I just start giggling to myself.
That was one of my favorite moments on stage too. I still laugh about that constantly. Yeah. Whenever somebody brings that up, I'm like, I totally forgot. It was so natural. It was organic.
Yeah.
People started laughing and I was like, okay, I have to keep doing. I think at one point I took a drink of my glass. Yes, I was supposed to be playing guitar, but I took a drink because I was like, I'm just going to roll with this. It's killing. I have to roll with it. Yeah. Super funny. That was hilarious. Speaking of that, do you think you can still sing that song, the chorus? You just try it and then we'll cut to a break. Ready? Okay. Thank you for the music, the songs I'm singing. Thanks for all the joy they're bringing. Who can live without it? I ask in all honesty, what would life be without a song or dance? What are we? So I say thank you for the music, for giving it to me. So I say thank you for the music, for giving it to me. Lovely. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Abs Stoiber.
Hey, guys, it's Jesse. Instead of talking about Astorga's Mexican restaurant and how much I love it, I'm going to do you one better. I am going to use their online ordering system right now and show you how fast it is to get your food ordered. Ready and go. Okay, I am going to get a Astorga's Chihuahua-style burger combo. Click, added to cart. And what do I want to drink? What do they have here? Mocktails, eh? Let me get a watermelon. We're going to get that. And then we move on to sides. I want to get some chips. And I want to get some salsa. And what else am I going to get here? I'll get some extra guacamole. And move on from there. Soups and salads. What's soup of the day? Let's have that. We'll click that. And we got some appetizers here. Check that out. Bean dip, Mexican buffalo wings. Oh man, okay. Click. That goes perfect with Mexican burger. And it looks like that is good. Oh my gosh, there's all these other things, enchiladas and burritos. Nope, we're sticking with the burger here. We're doing that. And click here, order, boom, done. It is sent. All I have to do is go pick it up, man. That's how long it takes. You are good to go. Astorga's Mexican restaurant. You can't go wrong. There's nothing about that place that isn't awesome. I love them. Phone number, 760-872-3849. And you can see the menu at astorgasmexicanrestaurant.com where you can place your online order. Trust me, that's how you want to do it. Head over there today. And do me a favor. Let them know Jesse sent you.
Winter air service to the Eastern Sierra is right around the corner. Advanced air service will begin on November 22nd and fly through April 29th, 2024. Catch a flight to or from Carlsbad or Hawthorne LAX on Thursday, Friday, Sunday, or Monday, direct into Mammoth Lakes. United Airlines will fly daily December 21st through March 30th to San Francisco and Denver, direct to Bishop. Get more information on air service into the Eastern Sierras at visitmammoth.com/flying.
Mammoth Lakes.
Okay, we are back on Get Real with Jesse Steele, and we're here with Abs Stoiber. First, I want to point out one thing. Do you have Patreon? If you don't, you need it. Go to patreon.com, patreon.com/Eastern Sierra Now. That's the best way to help support this show and Eastern Sierra Now in general. Because if you have a business, you can always advertise on this show, which if you have a business, you should advertise on this show. But it's a good way to get your business name out there. But what if you don't have a business? How are you supposed to help support things you love, like local podcasts, local news, local entertainment, local events calendar, a local mobile app? But patreon.com is the way to do it. So if you go on patreon.com, again, /Eastern Sierra Now, you can sign up for many different levels, $5, $1, $10 million, whatever you think you want to give to help support local news, local entertainment, local theater. I mean, we do everything here. So that is the best way to make this happen, especially now that we're trying to create so many different podcasts, to have like a podcast nation, if it were, here in the Eastern Sierra. It's a lot of work for me. This episode probably took me 4 or 5 hours by the time I'm done with it. So, and that's just me by myself. So that's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. So that's the best way to do it. Go to patreon.com/Eastern Sierra Now. Sign up for one of our tiers. And what it does is you just pledge $5 a month to help out. That's all it is. Just comes out of your bank account, $5. You'll never miss it. It goes so much towards helping us here. There's behind the scenes stuff. We'll be putting out episodes of our podcast with no commercials, so you can just listen to it straight. We might even have exclusive Patreon stuff in the future. We'll have merchandise, we'll have gifts, we'll have, you know, handwritten letters, we'll all come mow your lawn, whatever it is you need. You know, that's the kind of stuff that we'll be doing on there. So stay tuned, go to that. And the best way to listen to our podcast, if you don't have it yet, is the mobile app. Just go to your app store, download Eastern Sierra Now. Not only will you get all the local news, local events calendar, weather, fishing report, ski report, snow report, now that we finally have some snow, you know, stuff like that. That's all there, but it's the easiest way because it's right in your phone. You don't have to dial 92 point whatever to get your FM and that kind of stuff to listen to the news at a very specific time, you know, so that you can hear somebody tell you some news that maybe you don't even want to know and you just want to skip. You can go to the mobile app on Eastern Sierra Now and look at any bit of news that you want at any time. So right now, you have the chance. check it out. It's right there. You want to listen to any of our podcasts, our news podcasts, anything like that? Very easy. All you have to do is just click the podcast when you want to listen to it. So that is the very best way to do that. So go check those out. You will not be let down. Abs Stoiber. So we talked about theater. Mm-hmm. The next step, of course, is film, because that's another thing that you are passionate about and have been worked on. One of the first times I met you was because you were interested in film when you were a very small kid.
Yeah.
And I believe your mom reached out to me. You might have reached out to me, knowing you, and asked me to teach a film class at Mammoth Middle School.
Yeah. Right?
So I came up and met you guys and did just a brief little, this is what you do to film, this is how you do stuff. And I always knew that you were going to be into something of that, because you just have that drive. Mm-hmm. And here you go. You just shot your first film, right?
I did.
Yeah. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So I shot this my senior year of high school. College. So last year.
Mm-hmm.
Shot it over spring break. It's been in development since the end of my junior year of college. And it's called Intruder. And if I'll put this out now, if you want to follow along with the journey of the film, because it's currently in post-production, it's almost done. We're also mm-hmm. hoping to send it off to film festivals.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to follow along, you can follow us at Instagram at Intruder_shortfilm. And if you even just look up Intruder short film, mm-hmm. it'll probably be one of the first things that pops up.
I'll put all the links to that on our page too, so they can find it.
Yeah. But so Intruder basically follows a college student named Blake.
Mm-hmm.
They are a non-binary individual at UC Santa Barbara in their junior year. And they deal with mental health issues. They have anxiety. They have mm-hmm. overthinking and intrusive thoughts. And basically the film follows kind of a typical young adult coming of age story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the kicker is it kind of takes a psychological twist, because there is the intruder, a shadowy figure that's in the back of one's mind that takes up a lot of really negative, intrusive thoughts and is kind of the thing that keeps them down and being able to move forward. It's kind of the personification of their mental health and where mm-hmm. they're at in their mental health journey. And it's at a very low point in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just trying to cope. They're trying to just get through it. But this shadow intruder figure just keeps getting bigger and bigger and taking up more space in their life
mm-hmm.
to the point where they can no longer understand what is happening in real life that is actually affecting them
mm-hmm.
versus what is just happening in their mind that is coming out of control and that they feel they can't control in their own mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of takes more of a psychological thriller trajectory.
Yeah.
But the film is really about mental health, and it's also from a queer lens, especially for myself, who identifies as queer and non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
Having that kind of lens, I feel like, isn't as common yet in the film industry of getting to explore mental health. And for me, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I came up with this in the first place, just a little bit of backstory. In my junior year, in my spring quarter, I got super, super depressed.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the lowest point of my life. And the one thing that actually kept me going was being in the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. I was in that at the time, and that was the thing that kept me going.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I was really struggling with my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I had really low self-esteem. Also, I had had COVID for a second time, so my physical health was also mm-hmm. extremely depleted. To the point that I had to start driving to school, which isn't very far from me. I was like a 5-minute drive,
mm-hmm.
but I couldn't bike anymore because I was just in a horrible, I was just in a generally horrible, horrible state. And this thought came in my brain of imagining just a shadow figure
mm-hmm.
weighing on my brain and my body. And I always felt like I had this weight on my chest whenever I walked about in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that was how the film actually came to be. And I had this thought 2 days before there was an application mm-hmm. submission for doing a senior honors project. And so I was like, you know what? I might as well use what I'm going through and use it for good. Especially for me how can what I'm going through help others feel that they're not alone?
Mm-hmm.
That's like the biggest thing of this film mm-hmm. is I want the people who need to see this film get what they need from it of knowing they are not alone.
Yeah.
And the people that don't go through these things,
yeah.
they can watch it with a new lens on people and go, oh, I didn't know people could feel this way.
That's a really interesting take. And I it was clear as you were explaining it for the first time that this was about, you know, your thoughts. This is something that had happened to you, clearly. And I personally think, as a film buff and, you know, teacher and everything that I've done in my life, the strongest films, the best films came from a place of courage. And it came from you are willing to, whether you're an actor or you're a director or a writer, whatever you are, you having the courage to open up to the world, that's what makes the film magic. As opposed to Thor just blew up a tank, which is cool. That's amazing. But that's not courage. You know what I mean? That's not what this is. This is courageous, what you're writing, because it is you. And it's clear that Blake is a personification of you in that. So what I also love about this idea is that the protagonist and the antagonist are the same person.
Yeah.
And it's something from inside that maybe is influenced by outside, but that's not able to be seen. It's not just clear like, oh, my stepdad's a jerk, so that's why I have bad thoughts. You know, it's like there's usually, that's usually how these things go. So it's really interesting to be like that this, because I'll need to see your film because I haven't seen it yet. I'm really interested. But it seems like the protagonist, being the intruder, is something that you'll have to come to terms with, I'm guessing, is how you go to the end of this. Because it's not just, oh, I killed it. It's not going to go away. That's who you are. We all have an intruder. Every single one of us. Doesn't matter if it's from a queer lens or not. You know, as a straight white guy from Big Pine, California, I constantly talk myself. I told you today I have to stop talking bad about myself. And so that's, those are the big things. What I really love about this, and I'm way more interested to talk to you about this stuff, is from the queer lens, like you mentioned, because a lot of times a psychological movie will just be like, oh, well, that person was gay, so that's what their problem is. Or that person was, you know, whatever. With this, it's taking that away, and it's showing you it doesn't matter that this person is queer, non-binary, whatever it is, that in that situation, it's this other problem that we all face. And that that problem is what can bring all of us together, that maybe don't understand what queer means or non-binary, but I do understand an intruder coming in and telling me negative things that I shouldn't be doing. And that's brilliant. And I applaud you for that. That's cool. So I'm very interested in knowing this. As I said, a straight white guy from Big Pine, California, explain to me exactly what non-binary means and exactly what queer means. Because we've always grown up with you're straight or you're gay. But now there's LGBTQ. And in all honesty, most people in Bishop probably don't even understand what half of that is. We have such a great community here with the new, especially the new club, Eastern Sierra Pride, which Eastern Sierra now absolutely supported this year and helped. It was a sponsor for their event and stuff. And it was fantastic. And we're super proud to be there for them. But that doesn't mean we all understand exactly what this, what these are. And so it's a really good opportunity for me to talk to you about this. What does that mean? What does it mean for you? What does it mean for me? What does it mean for everybody? How do we learn to get along and understand what everybody's journey is, not hate it because we're scared? Because that's mostly what it is. I don't understand you, so I hate you. Well, that's stupid. You know what I mean? I don't care. So, and that nobody should. It's stupid. So explain. So what does queer mean? And what does non-binary mean?
And first of all, I'll also put this out there of this is coming from one specific person in that community. I do not speak for the entire community. My feelings on it, I have very specific thoughts, and especially coming from my lens, especially also being a white person. And I do present very much as a feminine presenting person. So I just want to throw that out there as a shout out to the POC, which is stands for people of color, but that group of queer and trans individuals that paved the way for people like me today and the, this new generation. So queer, it used to be more of a slang term. Queer means strange, and that was what used to be a negative connotation for the community.
And for gay, usually. And for gay. Always heard queer is like he's queer or whatever it means he's gay. And negatively.
Know, and in a negative way. But now the LGBT community has kind of taken back that term and kind of, it now stands for more of like an umbrella term. I like using the term queer for my sexuality specifically because I find that to be a very complicated and niche thing. And not everyone needs to know, like when I meet someone, I don't I don't need to list off all the things I am. So just when I say I'm queer, you just know with my sexuality and my gender, it's an overarching umbrella of I am in that community. That's all you need to know. Non-binary specifically, so most people see gender as a binary. You're either a woman or a man, or you could be a trans woman or a trans man. Non-binary is something in between. For me personally, non-binary is you aren't on that timeline, or okay. not timeline, but you're not in that area.
You're just not playing that game.
Yeah, you're just not okay. playing that game. You don't identify as a girl. You don't identify as a boy. You mm-hmm. are a person, yeah. which for some people is kind of a hard...
It's a hard concept.
It's a hard concept yeah. to grasp, especially because everything in mm-hmm. our world is so based on the binary.
Right.
And so being non-binary, mm-hmm. it's, I am not part of the binary. It's in the name.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, my, and when it comes to pronouns, like my personal pronouns are they, them, and theirs.
Okay.
For me, they, them works because especially in, for me, with mm-hmm. my line of work, I don't want my gender defining what roles I can play.
Yeah.
Obviously there is a limit to that. Like right. I would not imagine, like, I do not have the experiences of being a trans woman.
Right.
Especially having right. been born as female presenting. But when it comes to other roles, I don't want someone limiting my opportunities of, oh, you're just a woman. No.
Gotcha.
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
And even in my personal life, I started questioning my gender in high school. Mm-hmm. Specifically when I was at Bishop. And, you know, it's hard coming from a small school where you aren't really exposed to other people in the queer community. Like, mm-hmm. I was probably, in my friend group, I was the most heavily involved in, I am part of that community.
Yeah.
And was doing the most active work of who am I as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I got to college where I have now several of my best friends also identify as non-binary. They mm-hmm. are very heavily in the community. But it wasn't until I got to a bigger place where I can meet more people in the community where I was like, oh, I'm not alone.
Right.
The thoughts I'm having right now about, do I not identify as a girl anymore? I don't even know. I could meet other people that had that similar experience. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm not crazy. This isn't a weird thing. It's just how my brain works.
Yeah.
It's the way it is. And so, like, in Bishop, because of the smaller community and I didn't have many people to look up to, I really kind of put that on the back burner.
Right.
And
well, it's small here.
Yeah.
That's how it is. I mean, kids, like, listening to this right now, you could very much be, like, questioning whether you want to be a vegetarian. It doesn't have to be yeah. something as big a choice as, like, I'm non-binary. Yeah. But when you're here, it's a smaller place, and there's yeah. more... It has changed a lot in the years, but there's been a very conservative overtone of stuff here,
yeah.
which is you don't think these thoughts. You don't go in that direction. You're going to yeah. be... chastised for it, whatever. So it might not even be that bad anymore. And thank
yeah.
God for things like Eastern Sierra Pride
yeah,
for the kids and
God.
The people around here that get the chance to be able to just be who they are and feel safe being that.
Yeah.
And that's so I applaud you for that. And I think that that's a really interesting thing to show how, like, when you were in high school and stuff like that you kind of felt a little bit like, maybe I shouldn't talk about this or whatever. Because
yeah.
like during Mamma Mia, I didn't know that you had those kind of thoughts and that's
no.
what your thing was. But then after, when you were back for college, then I found out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay, that's, you know, people like me aren't going to care. But mm-hmm. some people do. And
yeah.
that's where it's, and it's another business.
Yeah, and like, thank God that yeah. there's Eastern Sierra Pride now. Like, I wish I had that community when I was younger.
Yeah.
Especially because, like, I started questioning my sexuality in middle school.
Right.
And so to have that community, I'm so glad that that's here now for people
mm-hmm.
to have access to and to know, hey, I have a group of people, even in a small
mm-hmm.
town in the middle of nowhere
mm-hmm.
in the Eastern Sierras, I have a place I can go to that there are people who understand what I'm going through.
Yeah.
Or I can have people that I can ask questions who have already been through this journey that I have. Because
right.
that was, again, like I said, I had no one else to look up to.
Right.
For most of my journey until college, I went through a lot of my questioning and on my own or
mm-hmm.
with Google.
Mm-hmm.
And Google's great, but when it's internet.
Yeah.
And it's hard to find, especially for me, like I have a harder time. I never really got into like making a community through the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that was really hard and I felt really alone for years.
Yeah.
And so, which is why I ended up putting it on the back burner. But even when I started coming out more with my gender and I was like, okay, I am non-binary. And I did explore with pronouns for a while. I was using both they, them and she, her pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it just didn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
And especially too, because I am very femme presenting,
right.
I'd rather say to someone, my pronouns are they, them, theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that's on the table,
mm-hmm.
because usually, and especially with a lot of my friends that there's dual pronouns that they use.
Mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, unless they're part of the community, if you give them the option of what you look like,
mm-hmm.
people will use that pronoun. And that happens.
Yeah.
And that's something I considered when trying to understand more of who I was. Mm-hmm. But I personally go with they, them pronouns because that is what I'm comfortable with at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. But if someone uses she, her and slips up, people are still learning. We're still, especially in...
As a society.
As a society. Yeah, like in places, even in places like LA and New York, like there's still people who are learning. And even my professors, like, it's taken them years, and they still slip up. Mm-hmm. There's still moments where they'll slip up, but they just say, sorry, they fix it, and they move on. And that's the biggest thing that I think people who are just learning about the community, and especially with identities such as non-binary, that they're like, I've never heard of this before. Don't let that stop you from wanting to be there for the people that you care about. Mm-hmm. And just when you do mess up, you don't make a big deal of, oh, I'm such an idiot. What am I doing? I completely offend. No. You don't need that. You just say, sorry.
Yeah.
They. Or you redo the sentence. Mm-hmm. And then you move on. That's all.
It's no big deal.
It's no big deal.
Yeah. Like, I believe I said she earlier when I was talking about reminiscing about a story that you did in high school.
Yeah.
And I thought that at the time. I'm like, oh, that wasn't right. But it's like, the problem is, especially when you're absent-minded, when you talk like I do sometimes, like I've been known as Captain Tact for years. I'll just say some shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. And I don't mean it. You know I have nothing but love and respect for you.
Yeah.
And so when I say, so that's the thing is, a lot of us, it's okay that you're not on it all the time. Okay, I have to be nervous around you all the time because I have to say they, them. It's not that big of a deal. It's just a respect. It, like if I wanted to go by Phil instead of Jesse. Yeah. It's the same thing, sort of. Not really, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
If somebody calls me Jesse, I can say, oh, I go by Phil now. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Phil. That's all it is. You don't have to make a big deal. And I think that's a problem is people don't like being told what they have to do. Yeah. So and if I don't want to call you they, them, then I shouldn't have to. Well, it's not about you. It's your journey. This is your thing. And if you have respect for that person, do it. And if you don't, then fine. And so, and I agree that it's just a matter of how you feel as a person, who you are as this person. And that's what I'm learning. That's what, because like I didn't really know what non-binary meant.
Yeah.
And so, and like, especially because you're very, as you said, femme presenting is the proper way to say that.
Yeah.
Because you clearly, you know, come across as a pretty girl. And so, and that's what that is, but that's who you are. But that doesn't mean that's who you are inside, right? And that's what people can, like me that aren't that can understand that just because that person looks like a boy, it doesn't mean they represent themselves as that. So it doesn't mean that you have to be confused and be like, wait, you look like a boy, but you're saying that you're there, whatever. Well, it's not that complicated. I think that's what I'm learning here and what you're saying.
Yeah. And I, especially too, like for anyone that's listening that maybe you do have someone, even if they're just transitioning in the binary, if they're like, I am a trans woman and that's who I am, that can still be a hard transition for some people.
Yeah.
Like, on the receiving end that maybe have never been exposed to that. Mm-hmm. And what I say to that is, if you're new to this community, check in with the person that is telling you this and don't dismiss them of saying they're wrong. Don't tell them, I don't understand your identity. I don't get it. Mm-hmm. Just say, okay, this is new for me. Mm-hmm. What can I do? And also do your research.
Yeah.
And because again, like I had said at the very beginning, my experience is a very specific experience that's been shaped by me living in the Eastern Sierras, me being in theater, me being exposed to different people in my life. Mm-hmm. So I have a very specific idea of what my presentation is. Mm-hmm. That's not the same for everyone. So just checking in, but then doing research. If you don't know what non-binary is and you don't understand it from like my perspective, go look it up and find resources that are reliable that say, hey, this is what you do. Here's how you can improve this slowly over time. And just be patient with yourself, but be aware that it's not about your feelings. Mm-hmm. It is about you are caring for the person who has come out to you or is there saying, this is who I am. And you say, okay, what can I do? Mm-hmm. Even if you don't understand it right away, as part of the community, we're not asking you to understand. Mm-hmm. We're asking you to say, okay, I don't get it, but I respect you and I love you and I'm gonna put in the work to get better.
Mm-hmm. You're telling me, you're telling people, this is what I wanna be called. And if they choose not to call you that, and just be out of spite or hate, or I don't agree with what you're doing, so I'm gonna say this because I believe something else, it's just you being a dick. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. And so, because you can very well just ignore you. I don't have to interact with you if I don't agree with your choices or what you think is right or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't have to. But if it's somebody that I love, somebody that's a friend of mine, somebody whatever, I need to take that respect. Like an example of what I was thinking of was somebody in our, I'm not going to name names, mm-hmm. but somebody that we both have dealt with in our life together working professionally, told me one time that they were from an older generation, mm-hmm. and they didn't think and or think they should have to say anything other than she, because that's how that person was raised. And mm-hmm. so if they're going to say something like, hey, what's up, girl, they shouldn't have to change their way of thinking or what they say,
yeah.
because you want to be called something else. Yeah. And they didn't think that was okay. Yeah. And I think that's the wrong way of looking at it.
And again, like when it comes to, because I've heard that argument so many times of, oh, I'm from a different generation.
Yeah.
And I would like to point out that when I say professors, some of the professors that I've had are in their
70s. Yeah.
And while it took them 3 years to kind of get an understanding and mm-hmm. to get better and more fluent at using mm-hmm. they, them pronouns or just general understanding of the community, mm-hmm. it took them time, mm-hmm. but they put in the effort. So for me, when people say, oh, I'm not in that generation, mm-hmm. I think that's, to be frank, a weak excuse, because if my 70-year-old professors can learn how to use my pronouns from ground zero,
yeah.
I think anyone can if they put in the work. Mm-hmm. If you don't put in the work, then yeah, you're never going to get it.
Of course not.
But if you're truly caring about the people in your life, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what generation you are. It's like if I tried now to learn French, right. yeah, it's going to take me months and maybe even years to get super fluent.
Right.
But if I actually put in the work rather than doing Duolingo mm-hmm. three times, mm-hmm. then yeah, I'm going to get better. And I think it's a similar thing. It's language. Yeah. It's just changing the way you mm-hmm. approach the language of talking to people mm-hmm. and with pronouns. And another thing too of like, oh, we don't use like they, them pronouns have never been used for like talking about a single person. Mm-hmm. That's not true.
That was one of my questions, is because they, them, how did that come about? Because it is plural, but yeah. you're about to explain. So I'm glad yeah. you're saying that, because that was my next question.
Yeah. And so it's not like, so if I was talking about you, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be like, oh, they is a podcaster.
Yeah.
I don't suddenly change grammar. That's yeah. not how it works.
Yeah.
I still say, oh, they are running their own podcast. You keep the grammar the same. Mm-hmm. But another thing, I love this analogy, is say you found a random wallet on the street. Okay. And you're like, oh, there's a random wallet. I wonder, like, this must belong to somebody. I wonder if they have a phone number in there. Oh, like, maybe there's, oh, maybe, oh, I see their ID. Maybe I can call them. Okay, let me call their number right now.
Yeah.
You hear, it comes out naturally. It yeah, still yeah, yeah. works.
Because you don't know if that wallet belongs to a guy or a girl.
Exactly.
At that point. You're saying they, because you don't know.
You have no idea. And
that makes sense. That's a good one.
It's more, and I've caught people doing stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's more common than people think it is. Mm-hmm. They just don't, they aren't aware of it. They don't catch themselves doing it. And a big part of the learning process mm-hmm. is putting in that recognition. Mm-hmm. And so, like, and another thing I love using that I saw a few years ago on TikTok of like, okay, I am struggling. How do I get this in my mindset? One way you can look at it is if you're struggling with the, oh, this is a single person, but I'm using they because it's plural, if that's what your stance is. Imagine whoever you're talking to, if they use they, them pronouns, imagine they have a little buddy sitting on their shoulder. Mm-hmm. Whatever little buddy you want can be whatever. And some people will even make little like pipe cleaner things or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then that way, when you look at that person, they aren't one person. There's mm-hmm. at least two people that you're talking to mm-hmm. at all times. Mm-hmm. And so getting that muscle memory of, oh, I'm talking to them because it's gotcha. Me and my little buddy.
Yeah.
That's an analogy and like a little practicing tool that I personally think could be really effective for people that aren't used to that and need yeah. to get that brain process.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but and to be clear, you're not saying people that are non-binary are two people. No. You're just saying for those of us that are addressing non-binary yeah. people, it's a good way for the muscle memory to build in. So you get yeah. used to saying they
yeah.
or
it's
them.
It's all about muscle mm-hmm. memory. And I mean, at the end of the day, that is a good starting point. Mm-hmm. But like I said, do the learning about non-binary people and doing the research on the actual labels and gender expression. Mm-hmm. Don't just rely on that tool as like, mm-hmm. oh, that's going to get me through, because in order to fully accept someone at the end of the day, mm-hmm. you need to unlearn the things that you associate them with.
Yeah.
So for me, again, I am very femme presenting, mm-hmm. but a big part of even my own personal unlearning, I've had to, because I used to misgender myself in my brain.
Yeah.
And a big part of my journey is in my brain, I have to teach my brain to default to they, them pronouns when thinking about myself.
Okay.
And I let go of the notion of yes, maybe I was a woman, I mm-hmm. was a girl, but I have to unlearn that in my brain, or it's never going to fully sink into my body and it won't be authentic to who I am.
Right.
So it just takes time. It's time and putting in the effort to learn.
Yeah. And just like anything, like if, let's say politics or something. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of, and that, God, such a divisive thing in our country. But if you look at something like that and all you want to do is complain because you happen to be this side of the political spectrum and mm-hmm. you complain that the other side is bad. Well, what research did you do about the other side to understand their points of view? Yeah. Maybe after you've researched it, you understand where they're coming from, you still disagree. Well, now you're informed. But before that, you're just spouting off because of something you were told to believe at some point. And that's exactly the same thing here. If you're against any sort of queer thing, LGBTQ, whatever, and you hate it, there's so many people that there. Mm-hmm. Well, when I say that, there's not that many, thank God, but there are people that complain whenever, like, say, the Eastern Sierra Pride people put something on Facebook. Whatever. Well, did you put any effort to try to understand that side? You don't have to like it. You don't have to be a part of it, but you have to at least respect other people's lives and what they do. So mm-hmm. if you put that effort in and you understand it, then at least you're informed. If you take the time to try and understand it, it's going to open your eyes to a bigger world that you don't have to be a part of, but at least you can understand and respect. And that's the most important thing. It's the same with like politics. Yeah. The reason we have so much division in our country is because we don't take the time to learn about other people's opinions and respect them and try to work together. Mm-hmm. It turns into an instant, I hate you every mm-hmm. time because you don't agree with me or you don't feel the way that I feel. And I think that's probably a big part of why people in the LGBTQ community have gotten so much hate for so long.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. I think there's, you know, there's clearly a line when it comes to, like, you know, we can disagree on, like, pizza toppings.
Yeah.
But when it comes to do queer people deserve rights, mm-hmm. that's not negotiable.
Right. You're the same as any other person that I know.
And so, and like how you were saying of, like, it's queer people even to this day. And it's like, I think of Florida, mm-hmm. where there's tons of anti-trans, anti-gay legislation going through mm-hmm. because it's people who are afraid of us. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe it's stemmed from, like, in the 70s with the AIDS epidemic.
Right.
And it was made people afraid of queer people because they thought it was something to be afraid of.
Right.
And I think once you take the time to understand why and to take time to deconstruct that and to take a step back and say, this person is just as human as I am. Mm-hmm. And then being like, oh, we're human. They're just different. Mm-hmm. And like how you were saying, you're a straight white guy. For me, you're an ally.
Yeah.
You're not, but that doesn't make you queer. That doesn't make you anything than you aren't. And we're not saying, oh, by being an ally, you're queer. No.
Right.
You are, as in the name, an ally to us because you love and support us and want the same and best that everyone else is getting.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, it's such an interesting world to think. I'm really glad. Thank you for talking to me about this, because the stuff that I just didn't know, you know, mm-hmm. and it gives you the chance to, like that's what we just did, and hopefully people listening did the same thing. You got the chance to learn. You got the chance to maybe think, oh, maybe I'll just look into that a little bit.
Yeah,
it's not scary. Yeah. And it doesn't affect you in any way other than knowledge, which is never bad.
Yeah, and now for the people listening, you know one non-binary person. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got one.
Yeah, I heard that. And you know what matters? None of that. You know, it is what you are, and it's your thing. But you know what matters? You're a filmmaker. You went to school. Yeah. You're an actor. We just sang a song.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that always gets me, too, is it's like, oh, okay, well, that's all they are, is this or that. Well, no, not even close. That's nothing. Do I walk into a room and say, hey, everyone, I'm straight. Hey, I'm straight, looking for a girl. You're like, of course not. That's not how life works. So why is it, if you're not just part of the norm, or whatever, is that even the right word? I don't know what I'm trying to say. Just a straight person.
Yeah.
So if you walk in and you say that, that's not how it works. What you want to know is, who are you? What do you do for work? What do you do for fun? What have you been? What have you done? But if somebody comes in that's of LGBTQ, you know, queer, they then it's all of a sudden, oh, well, that's what they are. Well, no, not even close. No. That has nothing to, why should that even matter? I want to know who you are as a person.
Yeah.
What's your job? What's your hobbies? What's your friends? Who's your family? Do you have pets? What do you do? Yeah. That's who you are.
Yeah.
And that's where I think everybody gets so upset, that because they're doing something that maybe they don't agree with, be it religion or politics or raising or of a different generation or whatever the thing is. What the hell does that have to do with anything? Who cares? Do you want to go on a date with that person? No. Well, then what the hell do you care? that's been my thought from day one with this stuff.
It's like, I like this person. You don't need to. Yeah. I like them. That's all that matters. Yeah. And if we end up getting married and having kids, who cares? It's my life. Yeah. I can do whatever I want with my life. Exactly. And you don't have to be remotely a part of it.
Yep.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay. And if you want
to
be,
then you learn how to deal with this person. So thank you so much for telling me about it. I'm really glad to have the conversation about that, because it's not something that I know.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's really cool. So thank you. And I hope people at home learned too and got the chance to really maybe understand something maybe you didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, is there any off the top of your head, like websites or places that somebody can go to? Like, say maybe they're questioning some of these things from either side. Maybe you just want to know about it, or maybe you feel this way. Is there something that you can go out and there's some sort of resource? Of course, Eastern Sierra Pride, which if you're here locally, I would say you should reach out to them. Like I said, from either side of the spectrum. Maybe you just want to know some stuff. There is so many people there willing to talk to you and explain and give you the chance. But if you're questioning yourself, maybe that's something that would be helpful.
Yeah. The biggest one I'm thinking of for youth specifically is like the Trevor Project.
Okay.
Like, their big thing is lowering suicidal rates within the LGBT community, because of the unacceptance and a lot of families who don't support their children, we have very high suicide rates in the LGBT community. So I would say that's probably a really great resource. And especially for people in my community too, that are still in middle school, high school, in their 20s, that they're feeling alone. Yes, there's Eastern Sierra Pride, and I absolutely recommend reaching out. But if you still feel alone within that, Trevor Project is a wonderful place to do that. Okay. Oh, PFLAG. PFLAG is a wonderful, it's specifically of parents who have queer children.
Okay.
So if you know that your child is part of the queer community and you're wanting to learn more, and you want to talk with other parents who are in the same boat as you.
That's a great resource.
PFLAG, and they have a bunch of different chapters all over the U.S.,
okay.
And I believe they have an online chapter. That is a really great resource for parents. But I'm sure even for just individuals that are also curious that don't have kids, or maybe you have, like, nieces and nephews, that is another really great resource. It's literally spelled PFLAG, F-L-A-G.
Okay.
That is another resource that's more catered to like adults.
Yeah.
That I would recommend.
Okay. One thing I want to know before we go, and we'll just do this quick. So as queer filmmaker, are you planning on utilizing your homeland here in some way for making films in the future, or even a theater, maybe doing theater here locally, that kind of stuff? Is there something that you're interested in for just the next steps for ABS?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a few scripts and film concepts that I have in mind that I do want to bring to the Eastern Sierras. I know there's the one short film that I had brought to you like a year ago that's based on, if you look up the song Holy Water by Michael Ray, I have been working on a script. It's been on the side burner for a little bit because of Intruder.
Yeah.
But I wrote a script based on that, but then also still has some integration of the queer experience, but like I would like to film that in the Eastern Sierras.
Cool.
It's very much rural area, and there's already spots that I have like in my brain, and then there's also just a couple general ideas of scripts and stuff that I've written that I'm like, I want to film them here. 100% In what time that will happen, I don't know, but I know for a fact that when they're ready to be done, that this is where I want to film them, which is amazing. And I love being able to be like talking to people and I'm like, oh yeah, I have a whole world outside my backyard that I can just go home to and go film stuff. And in terms of theater, at some point when I do decide to come back to the Eastern Sierras, a big passion project of mine is I want to be able to start a kids company that's focused on rural areas in California and the West Coast, and bringing theater to those areas.
Cool.
Because I mean, both of us know, like, we grew up with Playhouse Kids, and we that, and like, there's also Shakespeare Kids and Mammoth that come up every summer.
Right.
That was
right.
another one I did. There was Showboat Theater in Mammoth that I believe is still going, but it's, they're summer projects.
Yeah.
And it's only these once a year opportunities for a couple of weeks. And I want to bring more of that. I want there to be consistent opportunities, even if it's not all year, but being able to bounce around and visit places more regularly for places that kids need theater. Mm-hmm. And to expose them, even if they never do theater again in their lives, but just giving them the space of like, if you want it, it's actually here for you.
Yeah.
And you can take it. And I, especially a big thing for me of like, theater camps can be expensive. And especially with everything in the world, like prices of camps and theater are constantly going up.
Oh yeah.
And so like a big thing I want to do is like provide scholarships for low income individuals and houses of like, I will pay, or like we will have a scholarship going so your kid can do this without having to worry about financial burden. Like I want to be able to just make theater as accessible as possible to kids, because that's where the future theater goers, theater actors, film actors, technicians, stage managers, that's where they all come from, is from a young age. And if you provide those opportunities, that's how theater and film stay alive.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And that's a great way to end this. You know, it's exactly, we both are absolutely on the same page with that, you know, and thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for enlightening us. It's been a fantastic episode. Everybody in the future, if they want to reach out to ABS or see anything that you're working on, like say Intruder and stuff, where can they reach out?
Yeah, so you can follow me on, I'm a couple places on Instagram. You can follow me on my professional account, Abstoiber, ABS.STOIBER. Like I said before, you can follow the Intruder page, which is Intruder_shortfilm. And yeah, those I think are the two best places to follow me. If you want to check out my website for whatever reason, that'd be super cool. And it's www.abs-stoiber.com.
And like I said, we'll put all these links on this too. So if you're watching the podcast anywhere where there's actual verbiage, you're going to see this.
So. Yeah. And so yeah, those are the main places I would say if you want to follow more of my journey and keep in touch with me. Those are the places to find me.
Well, please do. There's a very talented filmmaker, and I cannot wait to see where your career takes you. You know, thanks. And I've always thought that since you were a kid, so I'm calling it first. I'm your number one fan.
Woo!
Thank you so much for being here today. Cool. That's great. And thank you for listening. And we will have more Get Real with Jesse Steele coming up. So just keep, like I said, download the mobile app. And on the podcast page on there, you'll be able to find all of our myriad of podcasts that will be coming out. And it is all Eastern Sierra content that is super fun and super great. So anyway, thank you so much. And we will check in with you next week. And again, thank you, Abs, for being here.
Get real.